Shocker, how are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm fired up a little bit today.
Oh, okay. What's going on? I haven't been listening. I'm here to help.
No, we were just talking about how the bigger important things in life than sports, and how I refuse to watch the Pacquiao fight this weekend because to me it's supporting a woman abuser in Mr. Mayweather, so I will not watch it and really not discuss it. I'd rather discuss the fact that you know, here's a guy who's applauded for being a great boxer, even though he's pretty much a douchebag in everyday life.
Yes, well, certainly you're right, and you have a forum as a radio host to let your opinions be known, so good on you for not being a fence-sitter, and yeah, that's good. I think probably a lot of people would agree with you that sports in general kind of hasn't done a great job of taking a real firm stand, the NFL in particular, for a while there on those sorts of issues, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good on you for having an opinion and sticking to it and not being afraid to put it out there. So we won't talk about it.
Sure. Well, no, we J-Mo and I talk about it lots, and I'll gladly discuss it again later on. Tonight, no NHL playoffs. Game 7 last night, Washington wins. Game 7 tomorrow night, Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. First off, is Cronwall going to play?
I don't know. What is the latest?
Well, there's no word yet, but do you think he gets suspended?
Yeah, you know what? And no penalty on the play, right? I think that the standard that's been set out during the regular season, really the last couple of years, I think that's probably a suspendable hit based on the standard that's been set out. But it's playoff time, and it's critical playoff time, and this is where the big decisions have to be made. This is where they needed to have a crystal clear standard so that in the biggest, most difficult moments, they can make the right call, and it's obvious to everybody, because you get one that's right on the line. And, oh, boy, if you haven't been consistent, you open yourself up for lots of criticism. So I don't know that he targeted the head. The way the hit went, obviously the head got caught as well. Based on the standard that's been laid out, I would say that's a suspendable hit. What do you think?
You know, in slow motion, it looks way worse, right? When I saw it live, I was like, oh, that's Cronwall. And I remember who was it? We had Taylor Hall one day explain it, and he said how you've really got to learn to look twice when Cronwall's on the ice. That's his move. It looks like he's going out, and then he comes in, and he turns around, and usually he gets his rear end right in you. And when you watch in slow motion, yes, he comes up, and there is some clear contact. Now, was the initial contact the head? Man, I watch it in super slow motion, and I'm not sure I could determine if it was the initial contact, right? And that's what I think is going to be the deciding point.
Yeah, and I don't think the initial contact was necessarily the head, but the head, he got a big piece of it, you know, and that has been suspendable over the last couple of years. But I mean, what a decision to have to make. A borderline hit on during the regular season, it's easy. You find the guy or give him a game or a game or two or whatever. Now you're left having to weigh the value of a game 7 versus what probably would have been a game during the regular season worth of suspension. And how the heck do you do that? So I don't know, man. I don't envy them having to make that call. It would be easier if it were just plain obvious and we were all going, yeah, I mean, they have no choice. But because it's on the borderline, because it's questionable, just makes it 10 times more difficult, because the value of a game 7 versus the value of a 3-game regular season suspension is what's on the table here.
And you know that, well, it was funny. You saw a lot of teams like Columbus fans and many others who see Detroit on a regular basis. Oh, yeah, we've seen this from him before. But he's never been suspended. And hitting hard doesn't mean you should be suspended. If Cronwall's knocked a few guys over with big, clean hits, I have no problem with that. And I know he took 1 5-minute major. I was looking at his record for an interference call, which is rare, a 5-minute major for interference. But, you know, this guy's not being a headhunter. Does he look for big hits? Yes. But he's found a way to do it where it's within the rules.
And he's deadly at it. Like, what he does is he watches his prey, and then the second they have to shoulder check for a puck that's coming around the boards, or the second they have to look down to pick up a puck out of their skates, what he does such an amazing job of is he transitions from backing up to a quick pivot and now heading at a hard, you know, angle right towards them, and boom. I mean, he's just a cold killer off those boards. He's perfected it. He's deadly at it. And he's not a massive guy, but he's sturdy enough. And the way he uses his rear end, it's deadly. It's one of the most, you know, he's one of the most devastating hitters in the game. He just doesn't do it all that often, but when he does, he is really good at it. And I've seen it in the playoffs many, many times over the years during some of their battles with the Penguins during the Cup Finals. And, I mean, you have to watch out for that guy because he can hurt you.
Ryan Rashog joins us. Shog Report brought to you by the Golf Den. Definitely, big hit. Kucherov gets up right away, and I know, that doesn't mean that he might not have concussion symptoms. You never know. Not every hard hit results in a concussion. We get that, and some of them result maybe a week later. You never know. So if he's out, obviously that's a big loss for them. Tyler Johnson, though, undrafted player who's got 6 goals now in this series for 10. He's almost got half. He's got 6. The rest of the team's got 7. And this was a guy who in the regular season, a lot of people were like, well, yeah, he plays with Stamkos. But he doesn't play with Stamkos very often. And this guy's pretty legit player.
No, he's unbelievable. And listen, the thing about Tyler Johnson, people wonder how a smaller player can make it like that, right? The thing about Tyler Johnson, you watch his highlights and you watch those goals he scored, that guy can flat out skate. He is fast. And when you have wheels in today's NHL, you can make up for being maybe not the fleetest of foot, or you can make up for maybe not being the biggest guy. But it's the guys who are smaller who aren't the fat, look at Sam Gagner, right? Sam Gagner, had he had Tyler Johnson's speed, the ability he had with the puck and the things he could do with it, the skill level Sam Gagner had, that's the difference. Sam has similar will, a willingness to go to the net, a willingness to play tough and do difficult things. But Sam lacked that extra gear. Tyler Johnson has unbelievable wheels. And you watch those goals he scored, he's just beating people. And he's just going hard at it. So he's 24 years old. He's 5'9", undrafted, like you said. Yeah, he's playing with good players around him, but I mean, he's an unbelievable player unto his own. And you look at them having to give up Marty St. Louis a couple of years ago, and you think, man, how could they ever replace something like that, somebody that valuable? Well, here's Tyler Johnson, similar stature, and he plays a good two-way game as well. The guy, he's got a good two-way game.
He definitely does, and now suddenly Tampa Bay goes in with momentum, although we've seen in the history of Game 7, momentum really from the last game can mean a whole lot of nothing. We'll see. A lot of people expected them to win the series at the beginning, I picked them to win at the start, so I got to pick them in Game 7.
You got to stay with them now, man. Yeah, can't bail off that bandwagon now.
I didn't think they would go 7 games. And what's interesting is the fallout if Detroit loses.
Then the
Red Wings and Mike Babcock, the season will be over. Those discussions will happen. And you know that that Nicholson and Chiarelli and Toronto and Philadelphia and all these San Jose, all these teams that have a coaching vacancy are patiently waiting to likely have an opportunity to chat with Mr. Babcock.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I was kind of wondering today. I'm wondering how the Oilers are handling the situation with Todd Nelson right now, because there are coaching vacancies as we speak, right? The San Jose Sharks need a coach. The Philadelphia Flyers need a coach. There are coaching vacancies out there right now, and there's possibly soon to be more, whether it be the St. Louis Blues or the Detroit Red Wings or whoever. And my question is, if Peter Chiarelli wants to take his time and wants to interview all these candidates and wait and see where the ball drops on Detroit and Boston and Claude Julien, if he wants to take his time and wait on these things, and these jobs start getting filled in the meantime, that's tough for Todd Nelson, isn't it? Because if Todd's not going to be the guy, they need to let him know right away so that Todd can start taking care of himself. Because with what Todd's been able to accomplish, I guarantee you he is at least going to be interviewing for some of these jobs if he can. He's at least going to be able to sit down with Ron Hextall about that job out there. He's at least going to be able to sit down with Doug Wilson about the job in San Jose. The Oilers need to let him know sooner rather than later if it's going to be him, so that he can take care of himself, because he's been loyal, he's been patient, and he's done a good job for this organization, and I really believe they owe him that. So it wouldn't surprise me if Todd doesn't know his fate fairly soon.
Well, I think they could do what they did last year, where they granted him permission to interview for other jobs, and if he gets one, then he moves on, and if not, he stays within the organization, correct?
Well, it's a little different, though, right? Because last year he was an American Hockey League coach interviewing for jobs in the NHL. So Carolina, right? The head job in Carolina. Well, right now, but he's an NHL coach with a contract.
He only had the interim title. Right, he was never deemed the head coach, right? So I think that's kind of the I know he's down in OKC, but I would assume anyway that they would If you can't have a something tells me that Bob Nicholson and Peter Chiarelli are not going to do to Todd Nelson what the orders regimes of the past did to Tom Rennie and Ralph Kruger.
Yeah, and my point is, I want to articulate it publicly because I think that that's the right thing to do, is to give him every opportunity to get himself where he wants to be. And if that's not going to be with the Oilers, let him know sooner rather than later so he can be out there and be active about it. I mean, I think his priority is to be the Oilers coach. But I think with the way the lottery ball dropped and Connor McDavid here and Pete Chiarelli now in charge instead of Matt Key, there's a lot of things that have changed. And I think it's quite likely, if not a foregone conclusion, that Todd Nelson is not the head coach of the Oilers next season. I would think that that's probably unlikely at this point, given the caliber of candidate that the Oilers are going to have access to this year. And the sooner they let him know, then the sooner he can get out there and try and find something else. And if he doesn't find a head job, depending on who the new head man is in Edmonton, you'd think there would be a warm place for him on that bench as an associate here in Edmonton, because he's already got the rapport with the players. It's a great way to have a lot of change, but not too much change.
As long as the head coach wants him, please do not force feed the coach who he has to take in his staff.
I don't think you need to worry about that, though, because I don't think any head coach worth his salt is going to let that go anyways. I don't think that Todd McLellan or Mike Babcock or Ken Hitchcock or Dave Tippett or, you know, Claude Julien, I don't think that they take it, much like Pete Chiarelli wouldn't take a job, you know, where he knows he's going to have three or four other people, you know, trying to run his show. I don't think a head coach takes a job like that. You might be able to get Dallas Eakins to do it, but you're not going to be able to get a veteran guy like I think the Oilers are going to get. So I don't think those guys take that job under those circumstances. But you got to admit, in terms of experience, in terms of understanding and relating to the players, I mean, you go good cop, bad cop, Todd's your guy. He's got a great rapport with the players already. Knows them all inside out and backwards. He'd be a huge asset for a new head coach coming in who can be the heavy and can put the systems in place. And Todd's right there to help the guys through the change.
Ryan Rashog joins us. It'll be an interesting one. There's lots of moves and pieces on the chessboard in management for the Edmonton Oilers between now and the draft, and likely between now and the start of next season. Because
would you do Hitch? I mean,
would I interview him? Yeah.
Down to Todd Nelson or Ken Hitchcock. I mean, do you think Hitch is the right guy for this team?
That's a really good question. He would be good at being, you know, a disciplinarian hard ass, which they haven't had in their last few coaches, and I think it's probably something they need. I could see him as a transition guy for 2 years. I'm not sure he's the guy that if your ultimate goal is to get back and win. I'm just. You know, now I know you got to have the players. Number one, yeah. St. Louis has a lot of good players, and for whatever reason, they can't get out of the first round. So
they've been a dominant, like it's much like San Jose, right? They've had good regular seasons and playoff and a lack of success in the playoffs. So has the head coach done his job coaching his team over the long haul to a great record? And really, it's up to the players from there on in to get it done in the playoffs, or does some of the criticism have to fall on Hitch for not being able to get it done in the postseason with a great regular season team?
Yeah, it's funny because you talk to so many coaches who will admit, and this was nowadays things have changed a little bit, and I think coaching clearly plays a factor, but all of it's still up to the players to execute whatever the game plan is, right? As a coach, you can draw it up, and you can have the perfect game plan in the world. If the players don't execute it, then it's not like you can change your roster in the playoffs, you know what I'm saying? So it is funny. So many coaches have said come playoff time, you know, and a lot of ones who have won, so maybe they were just trying not to be arrogant by saying, well, no, it's on the players. But it is an interesting one, depending on the situation. I think there's obviously some responsibility on the coach, but ultimately, you know, the coach never asks his players, you know, to dish up a pizza with 3 minutes left in the third period. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, so, for sure, man. For sure.
That's why it's a tough one. I think that, you know, Chiarelli and Nicholson know him very well. They know his personality. They know how he works. And I think that's the one advantage that having both of them is going to give the Oilers organization is A, its credibility. Yeah. B, they also know a little bit, you know, whether it's Claude Julien, Ken Hitchcock, Mike Babcock, Todd McLellan, go down the list. They've worked with all of those guys in both of them and kind of know how they work better than we do. So they would know that, because we've heard all the stories. If Mike Babcock wants the job, he wants a little bit of say in player personnel, right? Now, does Peter Chiarelli look and say, man, I've worked with Mike a lot. He's a genius guy. Damn right. Why? Because Chiarelli even told us at his press conference, I make the final decision, but I'm not smart enough not to listen to other really astute hockey guys.
So. Yeah. So, and this is the thing with Chiarelli, right? Peter Chiarelli needs help. Like, he needs help to do what he's got to do. He's the president of hockey operations and the general manager of a hockey team. That, I mean, the whole coach GM thing never works. Nobody even tries it anymore. But even the president and general manager thing is a lot, probably too much. So he needs good, savvy veteran help. Now, whether that's a head coach who's maybe got his hands in things a little bit more and can help a little bit more on that front, or whether that's Craig McTavish, who stays with the organization and is basically the right-hand man of the general manager, not an assistant GM, but some other title, a VP of hockey ops, or who knows what the title is, but he needs basically another experienced general manager right beside him to work through the amount of work he has to do. I think Bill Scott is probably fine. He's still fairly young, and he's more of the contract and cap guy. There's always a place for those guys, but he needs an experienced hockey man next to him. And Kevin will be there, but he'll be a little bit more hands-off. And he's always going to have a certain say, but he'll be hands-off for the most part. He needs some experience there beyond a coach that maybe has a say too. So there's another position that has to be filled. And I think I think they would probably like it to be Craig McTavish. I think it's just up to McTavish to decide whether or not he's okay staying on in that role.
Yeah, that's the interesting one. Right now it's been pretty much locked down. I can't get any information on that one. What are you hearing?
No, I'm not hearing a word, and I'm chasing it just like everybody else, but the word I have is that there's no rush and that there's no decision, and, you know, to my knowledge, no formal offer has been put down, but I do know that they spent some time together, right? I think he, Kevin, and Craig were all in Kelowna together, were they not, scouting the Rockets just recently? And I think that... I think there's already a bit of a working relationship developing. So Craig's still with the organization. And I think that, you know, I think Peter would be open to it, to be honest. I'm kind of guessing and spitballing a little bit, but I think Peter would be open to it as long as he was firmly the guy in charge, which his titles make him. I don't think he's too proud a guy to be worried about having the other guy hanging around. And the other thing is that, you know, I mean, Craig's been the GM. It's not like it's not like the organization you're going to is saying, hey, here's your assistant GM, right? Like Brendan Shanahan's going to be saying to his new general manager, hey, meet Kyle Dubas. If you're no good in a year and a half, he gets your job. Now, Shanahan's not going to be saying that, but whoever takes that job will damn well know that this is Shanahan's boy and it's the up and comer. It wouldn't be like that here with Mac. He's been in that job already. Right, so I think there'd be a confidence there from Chiarelli to have a guy like McTavish around, and I think that McTavish has some value to the organization, not necessarily as the guy right at the helm, but I think he's got some value.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that. So, well, Stronger, that's a good debate for another day. We're at the time; our segment has run out, but we will discuss that tomorrow on the show.
Right,
because
on,
I would like to. We will have a counterpoint as to why you think he does and why I would question how much he does. We'll see about that, though. Tomorrow on the show. So have yourself a fantastic Tuesday. Enjoy watching McDavid nurse tonight.
Yeah, we will, buddy. Take care.